You're listening to Cowboy Logic Radio. Back to Cowboy Logic Radio. I'm Donna Fiducia, along with Don Nguyen. And our very special guest for this half hour is a gentleman by the name of Kevin D. Miller. And Kevin is making his debut right here on Cowboy Logic Radio. And our interview is kind of going to be twofold. He's an author of a book called Heart of Steel, where he found out, essentially like a 23andMe thing, where he found out about his family history. But he also is going to talk about how to avoid holiday chaos at the former, well, we're past Thanksgiving now, but now the Christmas dinner table, especially when you've got like drunk uncles and political arguments you have to put up with. Kevin D. Miller, welcome to Cowboy Logic Radio.
Thanks, Donna, and I appreciate you having me on.
All right, you are an Air Force veteran. I would assume you kind of lean politically to the right, and I thank you for your service, sir. I came up in a union family growing up outside Newark, New Jersey. I mean, if you voted for a Republican, you were an outcast. But I want to get to that in a minute. I want to talk about your book first, Heart of Steel, which I guess kind of woke you up to your heritage. And I just find that so interesting. And I want to talk about your book first before we get into the political problems with family members that don't think the same way we do.
Sure, Donna. Yeah. Actually, I woke up one morning to find out my last name really isn't Miller. It's really Puhalski. And the way I found that out is we found some old newspapers from 1920 that actually detailed a family tragedy in our family that stunned us and shocked us. We learned that my great-grandfather, who was a farmer in rural Ohio, Southington, Ohio, little township there, was murdered in his sleep.
Wow.
So yeah, so my grandfather, who was 12 years old at the time, my great-grandmother was bound and gagged in the farm. Supposedly, three men had come in and robbed them and done this crime, and she sent him to get the sheriff. And the sheriff comes, and the newspaper articles, you know, they start to chronicle the story over about a week and a week and a half, and it just starts taking some bizarre twists and turns to the story. Because everything's not kind of as it seems. So, this revelation was really, you know, a stunning revelation for our family. And I learned a lot about my grandfather, which is why I titled the book Heart of Steel. He was an amazing man, it turns out. And I didn't know him as well as I thought I did.
You know, Don's family comes from a farming family in the Midwest.
Indiana.
Yeah, in Indiana. And his last name is Nguyen, N-E-U-E-N, spelled the same way, forwards and backwards. However, he was actually a Nguyen Schwander.
Ah. Nice try, Donna.
Name was changed.
We're gonna give her an E for effort on that.
Which means new swan. It means new swan in Swiss, Nguyen Schwander. And you go there.
I got you.
We just got back there actually from Thanksgiving. You go and you walk through the cemeteries and all you see is Nguyen Schwanders everywhere.
Oh my gosh, man.
That was
crazy.
The thing. They shortened names back then. I mean, I think mine was fiduciary as well. They shortened names, but what exactly did you find as far as, you know, what happened with this family tragedy?
Well, what we found, I mean, like I said, it turned into a family scandal, which kind of explained why my grandfather changed our family name. He was trying to protect his family and try to kind of shield us from this scandal. And he took this to his grave. We didn't know this. My own father did not know his last name. My uncle, when my grandfather was dying, he asked his dad, he's like, "Pops, tell me about your life," you know, and he just raised a finger and said, "Don't ever ask me about my life." And he took it to his grave. We never knew. Him and his siblings swore a vow of secrecy back in the 1920s not to talk about it, and they didn't. They didn't talk about it.
Well, it certainly could see why you got the title Heart of Steel for your book, because if he took it to his grave, he wasn't gonna let it go at all. And families did that. I mean, obviously yours was based in tragedy, but families didn't talk about any maladies they had at all, you know, health wise.
Not outside the house, they didn't.
Yeah, you never talked about that stuff. I mean, you know, I was born with a dislocated hip. Okay. And my mother said, oh, I always knew where you were because you were thumping around because you were in a cast. And I'm like, I don't remember any of that. And so I horseback ride. I'm 26 years old. I come inside one day after riding for like 4 hours. And I said, damn, my hip is hurting. My mother goes, well, I never told you this, but like, well, when were you going to tell me? Don't you think that these kind of maladies might be something we might want to know? So when we get older, we know how to deal with these things. And but in your case, obviously, it's so very, very different. So you changed. How did you find out your real name was Puchalski?
Well, the way we found out was with the newspaper articles. I mean, that told us our actual name, and they misspelled it in the paper a few times. So it took kind of going through Ancestry.com and 23andMe, all those sites, researching a little bit more to actually get the correct spelling and to find out that it's actually Puchalski, you know. So, you know, that took a little work. And then we just kept digging. We kept digging into the story and talking to more relatives. And I had some letters that some of my grandfather's siblings' children wrote to my dad, which, you know, I used all this stuff for the book because it's based on a true story. That, you know, the story is factual. So it took some research to put it together.
So how did you find... well, in general, did you find 23andMe and all these Ancestry.com type websites to be helpful?
You know what? I did. And I'm an advocate of that because the results were helpful to me. I mean, I learned where my great-grandparents actually came from, the actual town in Poland where they actually, you know, migrated from into our country. And I did. And I learned, you know, the DNA said I'm 39% Polish. You know, I'm 40% Irish and I'm 39% Polish. Makes sense since my grandmother that my grandfather finds later in the story, his love of his life is Irish, feisty Irish woman, too, let me tell you.
Let me ask you this. The changing of the name, based on what I'm gathering here, and, you know, full disclosure, I have not read the book. Is that changing of the name was strictly for the purpose of not being associated with that name anymore. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yeah. My grandfather, he picked the name Miller, you know, as a common name.
Right.
He just kind of disassociate us with that scandal that kind of ripped apart his family, you know, a lot of pain. And he was just trying to cover it up and protect us and protect the generations to come from the scandal that, you know, that's in the book. Because it's a family scandal. It's a family tragedy, you know, and it's an odd story. My grandfather and his siblings later on end up in an orphanage in 1920. Not a great place to be there in 1920.
Hold on one second. To recap for anybody that's joined into the show a little late.
You got it.
We're talking about your great-grandfather, am I correct, that was killed?
Yes, my great-grandfather was shot in the head in his sleep.
Okay. And your grandfather and his siblings are the ones that changed the name, that decided, you know what, we're going to escape this tragedy, and we're going to do so by basically changing our lineage.
Right.
Awesome.
Yep, that's very true.
Man.
I wonder if that is, you know, something that happens a lot.
Hold on, Donna. What? You know, my last name, we were talking earlier about the fact that my last name is Nguyen, and that is a shortened version of Neuenschwander. And Neuenschwander.
Well, I guess I pronounced it wrong.
Well, you did, terribly, but that's okay, Fidusha.
I think it's Neuenschwander.
But here's the thing. My ancestor said, screw writing all these letters out when we have to sign our name. We're going to make it simple.
Yeah,
and that was the reason. You know, it's amazing that things happen in our lives and through our ancestors for the differing reasons. I mean, you know, my name's changed because of a convenience. Your name's changed to escape a really terrible situation. Did they ever find the guys that did this to your great-grandfather?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of the big twist that happens, you know, after, you know, we read the newspapers and we read of the investigation that went on. And yes, they do find the killers. It does happen. I won't give that away because I want you to read the book. But like I said, you can kind of see where it's going. My grandfather and his siblings end up in an orphanage, and he decides at that point, you know, we ain't having it because the orphanage was not a good place. So he runs away from that orphanage at 12, almost 13 years old, and hops a train to Chicago with the purpose of getting a job. He got a job in a steel mill as a bar catcher, and then he kind of got involved with bootlegging, and he saved enough money to go back to Warren, Ohio, and steal his siblings out of that orphanage and raise them, take care of them.
Wow.
Which, again, hard to steal. I mean, that's who he was, you know. I was so inspired by him, by this story.
You couldn't do that nowadays. You couldn't just run away and go get a job as a young teenager back then, you know. Back then, you could. You can't do that. Now, you'd be thrown in right back in the orphanage.
Well, and clearly he figured out that he could make more money bootlegging than throwing steel.
Yeah. Him and the Kennedy
steel, you know?
Yeah, he's a pretty smart guy, too.
I bet he was. What did he end up doing, really, in his life?
In his life, he did a lot. My grandfather could do anything. He, you know, being Polish, he could build anything. He could put. He laid floors. I mean, that was one of the things he did. He laid a lot of floors, a lot of tile. He had these big Popeye arms. I mean, he wasn't a big man, but he was strong as hell. I mean, he was a very strong man. And he pretty much did, you know, supported himself with his hands and his back. You know, he was in the unions when he was a young man as well, early on. But I remember him always building stuff. He built his own cabin in Ohio. I remember, you know, even when he was older and when he was dying of cancer, when I was in the Air Force, I went up to see him. I had no idea he was dying of cancer because he's not the kind of guy to complain. You know, he pulled his own tooth with a pair of pliers once.
Ugh.
You know, the man was a man. He was a man's man.
Well,
you know?
Here's the thing.
And this is what was great.
Yeah, that's what we have to always remember is that it appears that as the generations move forward, that those who preceded us, our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, those are the ones that really had the stones. We only have a couple of pebbles.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. I'm writing this book. I'm in his head through his eyes, and I'm like, man, could I have done this? You know, this man, it just amazes me, his courage, you know, his courage, and to be able to handle that kind of pain and tragedy and to just push through, you know, just push through for his family.
Let me ask you this. What do you think that your grandfather would think of some of the college students these days?
Oh my gosh. I don't think we have that much time, Don. He would think exactly what you're thinking and exactly what I'm thinking. You know, it's like, you know, you want to talk about tough, you want to talk about, you know, what it takes to survive. I mean, ooh, I'm kind of biting my tongue here a little bit. I think he would just think they were, you know, a bunch of crybabies that kind of need to maybe, you know, understand what it is to really have a tough life, you know, what it really is to stand up for yourself and your family, you know, what it really means to struggle and overcome adversity. I mean, because they really don't have any idea, in my opinion.
God forbid an EMP hits, they'll find out soon enough. All right, we're talking to Kevin D. Miller. He's an author of a book called Heart of Steel, writing about just an amazing family tragedy that he found out later on in life. And really, how do you come to terms with that? It's an amazing thing. On Twitter, it's at Heart of Steel. Book, is it, or B-O-L? What is it on Twitter?
It's B-O-1. I think on Twitter. Here's an easier way, Donna. All my social media is at the top of the website that I created for this. It's heartofsteelbook.com.
Okay.
I've got my social media at the top, and I've got links to the book where you can purchase it as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, before we get into kind of a part dough of this interview, which is going to be a heck of a lot of fun, I want to remind the listeners that while probably the most important thing in this conversation to Kevin is his family and what he's been talking about with regard to his great-grandfather and his grandfather, The most important thing, Kevin, to our listeners is that we express our gratitude to you for being a veteran.
And thank you.
And ladies and gentlemen, if you missed the first part of the interview, we're talking to an Air Force veteran. And thank you, sir, from the bottom of our hearts for taking an oath that never will expire so that people like Donna and I and many of our beloved listeners who do not have the privilege of serving in our military, that we were able to grow up in a country and only understand and experience liberty and freedom. And we're indebted to you for that. Thank you.
I appreciate that, sir. Thank you, Don.
Kevin, given what you learned about your family, and I would say you are an expert at dealing with family tragedy and family baggage. So you obviously can totally talk about what do you do at the dinner table if you've got a family member. So let's say, okay, here we're at Christmas dinner. You got a family member who basically doesn't agree with you, especially as an Air Force veteran.
You don't invite them to the dinner.
But it's family.
It's
you
simple.
Have to.
This is not rocket scientists. Listen, I've got liberals in my family.
Yeah, I know.
You know what? I love them.
That's
I don't
true.
Invite them anyplace.
That's true.
It's well, that simple.
Yeah, it is pretty difficult with your family. Now, I have a
if
son
who's... If you're walking around out in the bayou, Donna, and you see a bear trap, you don't step in it, right?
That's true.
Okay.
That's,
all right, Kevin, tell us how to deal with them. If for some reason we end up getting in a situation where we accidentally invite the wrong family member, how do we deal with that?
Man, I mean, that's a tough one, and there's a few ways you can deal with it. Like, the first one, like you say, maybe just don't invite them, you know, or just, you know, take them by the seat of the pants and toss them out. But
change but their would, last name.
Change your last
we'll
name.
Change your last name, and then they're not family anymore.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm kind of vocal myself, too, and I kind of, you know, for the sake of the family, I try to maybe remind people, it's like, hey, we're family here, you know, and it's okay to disagree. You know, I don't know. I kind of learn from, you know, from disagreements sometimes, you know. I think we can learn from each other, and it's okay to have discussion as long as it stays civil, you know. But if it gets where it's not civil anymore, then maybe it is time, you know, for that person to leave, you know. It's like this, you know, we're here trying to enjoy the holidays. We're trying to enjoy the dinner. We're trying to, you know, embrace our family and have fun and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I mean, it's if it gets out of hand, I would be okay with just saying, okay, you know, maybe it's time to, you know, for you to go or, you know, or if maybe you can turn the conversation, you know, to something else, to sports or something else we can agree on, you know, then maybe it'll go a little smoother. But disagreements are okay. You know, I'm okay with that. I can put my opinion out there. As long as we agree to disagree and we're respectful with each other, I think that's okay.
Well, and I totally agree with that. You know, the problem, at least that I am and seeing nowadays, is that, like back in the 90s and the 80s and even the 70s, you know, we could hold conversations with people that didn't share the same political views or, for that matter, societal views that we had. And it could be a discussion. Sometimes if it got heavy, we called it a debate, you know?
Yeah.
Now, it's like we're trying to have a conversation as a conservative. I'm trying to have a conversation with somebody I can't even associate, relate to, recognize, quite honestly, in some cases, as a fellow American citizen.
Right.
And, you know, I was a little over the top earlier when I said, you know, was saying, hey, you just don't invite them. The problem is it's gotten to a point where many of them don't even want to be there, even if you did invite them, because they hate you so much for the positions that you have taken and the stands that you've taken.
Right. And that's a sad thing. I mean, it really is a sad thing, because you're right. It never used to be like that. And I don't know when that changed and when that all happened, you know, but it's sad because, you know, then where's the hate? I mean, you have no communication. You have, you know, you don't, it kind of breaks the bonds, some family bonds in that regard, you know, so.
Well, according to Nancy Pelosi, if you're Catholic, you don't hate at all.
Bull crap. With her, she needs to be excommunicated.
Unless, of course, it's a fetus. Yeah.
And I want to know how Joe Biden ever takes communion to that. That shouldn't be happening. And actually, he got refused communion, I believe, somewhere out in Ohio when he was campaigning. I think it's one word, tenure. I really think it's one word. I mean, this past week, if you looked at those two,
what do you mean by tenure
for teachers, for like
a family?
No.
Hold on. Let me expand on this.
Okay.
Tenure. I think we ought to incorporate this, guys. Tenure for family. Okay. After 6 years or whatever, if you don't want to associate with certain family members, you shouldn't have to.
That's not what I meant. What I meant is tenure is ruining future generations. Case in point, this Stanford University professor and this Harvard professor that just spoke at these lunatic impeachment hearings as quote-unquote experts. I mean, they have never had a job in real life. They obviously have the LGBT community as number one in their sights, not teaching the kids. You know, it's indoctrination. And that's been going on since the early 1900s with public education. And I think, unfortunately, it's coming home to roost. I mean, even in the 60s, they said you have a right to express whatever you feel, and we will back that up even if we disagree. Well, it's really gotten a lot worse since then.
Kevin, speaking of the holiday celebrations that we go through in November and December, let me get your thoughts on what it might be like at Kellyanne Conway's house.
I was just going to say that.
I often wonder that. You know, I often do wonder that because there you got some difference of opinions at the Thanksgiving and Christmas table. I imagine that they probably just kind of put the truce on the table and, hey, let's just focus on, you know, dinner or on the turkey or whatever we're eating and stuff. Because, yeah, that would be a pretty diverse political environment, I'm sure.
I mean, it's one thing to be married to somebody who feels differently, but he gets on Twitter and Facebook and everything and criticizes Donald Trump, you know, his wife's boss. You know, I come from the Fox News Channel. Monica Crowley was married to, Monica Crowley's sister was married to Alan Combs, the late Alan Combs. Alan was a sweetheart. Okay. Now, I disagreed with Alan quite a bit, but we were friends.
Yeah, but that goes back to what I was saying, Donna.
You could
when Alan was alive and when he and Sean had a show, now Sean got a lot more overheated than Alan did, but that was the type of a liberal that you could actually have a conversation with and walk away feeling like you actually had a meaningful discussion.
Right.
As you could learn from.
And that's what I said to Monica. You know, what's it like being a fly on the wall at Thanksgiving? But Alan was the kind of person you could actually talk to. The other one that always gets me is Mary Madeline and James Carville. Those two are are out there, too. Kevin, let me reintroduce you. We're talking to Kevin D. Miller. Sure. He's the author of Heart of Steel. Find it at heartofsteelbook.com. You can find all that information there. Facebook, same thing. And on Twitter, it's Heart of Steel, B-O-1. But he's written about his family history and how his great-grandfather basically rewrote family history due to a tragedy. And fast forwarding now to the holiday chaos and family tragedies that can be avoided at the Thanksgiving and holiday table. And as an Air Force veteran, now, do you find that you have other family members that disagree with you, or are you pretty much a cohesive group there?
I think for the most part, most of my immediate family, we're pretty in agreement with where we stand. We've got other family members that, you know, are on both sides of the aisle there. So, but I've never really had, too much of an issue. And the other thing, too, is I think it's another reason I kind of think it's okay to have those discussions at the table. But, like today, it is more heated than it ever used to be, is I want to kind of give the example to my children to say, hey, it's okay to speak up. It's okay to express your opinion and don't be afraid, you know, when people try to start labeling you or you know, calling you names or anything like that. It's okay to stand your ground because I have to be the example for them as well, you know, so that they don't, you know, withhold or withdraw, you know, what their true feelings about something is, that it's okay to speak your mind.
All right, give me some tips, because I have a son in law school who's sort of transitioning to the dark side.
Oh, gosh.
And he's got a future sister-in-law who has a Michelle Obama coffee table book.
Here's a tip for you, Donna. You call your son up and you go, let me tell you something. Right now you're in the will. The decisions that you make and the positions that you take over the next 4 to 6 to 10 years are going to determine whether you remain in the will. How's that sound, Kevin?
That's a pretty good advice, I would say.
But, you know, you got a future sister-in-law. We go to her house, and she's got a coffee table book of Michelle Obama sitting there. I'm like, oh, my gosh. We're so doomed. We are just so doomed.
So I sat back, and I rested my feet on it.
that's interesting, you know. And it's like, where you go with that, you know, it's.
Well, some people don't go anyplace with it. Listen, we got about 2 more minutes left. Sure. I want to talk about and have you speak, actually, to our listeners about the book that you've written and give us about a minute and a half thumbnail sketch to close out.
You bet. You bet. A 12-year-old, almost 13-year-old boy wakes up one morning to find that his father's been shot in the head and his mother's bound and gagged, and he gets sent to the sheriff. Then a big scandal kind of unfolds and ensues that takes a lot of twists and turns and ends up with him in a orphanage with his siblings. He finds a way to escape that orphanage to come back to steal his family away and take care of them. With his heart of steel, he swooped them up and took care of them. And the last part of the story is actually a love story where he meets my grandmother. There's lots of gangsters and speakeasies and, you know, 1920s and histories and murder mysteries and love stories. It's got it all. It's a book that my readers have all said they couldn't put down. They couldn't put down. They cried. They laughed. They felt emotion. And they just, I got a lot of emails and stuff from people and calls that just said they really love the book.
Needless to say, it happens in a lot of it in Chicago. I think that kind of fits during the 1920s. Kevin Miller. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Most of it is actually in Ohio, Canton, okay. Ohio, which was called Little Chicago at the time. And Warren, Ohio is where the orphanage was. So, but it's a story mostly based in Ohio.
Okay. Well, Kevin, it's heartofsteelbook.com. Kevin Miller, we thank you so much. It must have been amazing to find your family story. And unfortunately, it was tragic, but I'm sure it drew everybody closer together as well. Heartofsteelbook.com, the author, Kevin D. Miller. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us here on Cowboy Logic Radio. And I do like to close with a quote. This one from Alexis de Tocqueville.
Merry Christmas.
That's not it. A decline of public morals in the United States will probably be marked by the abuse of power of impeachment. Whoa. As a means of crushing political adversaries or ejecting them from office. That was Alexis de Tocqueville back in 1835. Think about that, folks. And have a wonderful Christmas. Find us at cowboylogic.us. And in the meantime, God bless America. You've been listening to Cowboy Logic Radio, unfiltered, politically incorrect common sense. Find us on the web at cowboylogic.us and join our Facebook group, Cowboy Logic Restoring America Forum. That's Cowboy Logic Radio, unfiltered, politically incorrect common sense.